Hello, I'm Brandon Lewis, director of the marketing department at the Academy for Professional Painting Contractors, and I am super excited to introduce a wonderful person to you, someone I've known personally for almost a decade now, who can help you get unstuck in your business by removing the organizational barriers and the mental stumbling blocks that may be keeping you from moving forward. Dr. Melissa Gracious is a productivity psychologist. She earned her PhD in industrial and organizational psychology at Wake Forest University. She has spent 20-plus years helping small business owners, business managers, and corporate leaders unshackle themselves from the low-pay, high-stress habits that keep them feeling unproductive, unmotivated, and unfulfilled so that they can finally focus on the things that matter most. Melissa, I am honored to have you on the call today.
Oh, Brandon, well, you're one of the best interviewers I know, so thank you, my friend. I have really been looking forward to talking with you.
Well, you know, you have got a depth and breadth of information. I know a lot of folks that you have helped. You've worked in a lot of unique situations. Before we get right into what we're going to cover, why don't you back up a little bit and tell people about your background, how you became enthralled, interested in helping people become more productive and more organized?
Awesome. Thank you, Brandon. Well, it's interesting. I am a productivity psychologist, and I help people who, like you said, are disorganized, frustrated, and just thinking there's got to be a better way, get to the point where they're feeling there is a better way. They are able to get done what they need to get done during the day, accomplish their goals, both large and small, and be overall more successful. But here's the kicker. I was not born organized at all. I was not one of those kids who matched their socks in the sock drawer like you probably were, Brandon. I was
not that.
By every personality test known to psychology, I test out as a person who is very flighty and fly by the seat of my pants and detests planning and just would prefer for things to be a little bit chaotic because that's more fun. But
it is
more fun. But here's the deal. I got into corporate America shortly after finishing graduate school and found out that businesses don't run that way, and the chaos in which I was so comfortable was not good for my team or my boss or anybody. I needed to be much, much more systematic in order to stop causing chaos, to stop manufacturing emergencies, to stop interrupting other people. I was the culprit. I was the person causing the problems. And so I stopped. Thank goodness. I stopped and said, all right, I've got to learn to work differently because all I'm doing is throwing more hours at my situation. The whole work smarter thing, nah, wasn't doing that at all. I just worked longer. I'd stay an extra hour or then an extra 2 hours, or then all of a sudden, you know, there's nobody there but me, and I haven't done nearly what I needed to get done. And so the thing about it was I couldn't keep working that way. I was married, and my husband and I are celebrating our 20th anniversary this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure we would be celebrating our 20th anniversary if I hadn't decided to change how I worked. I'll be honest with you, because you know you have to see someone to have a relationship with them, and I wasn't seeing him. So I embarked in my early 20s on a quest to learn everything I could about how to manage my time, because email was pretty new about that time, and we were just learning how to use email, and all of a sudden we're getting more and more email. So I had to learn how to manage my email. I had to learn how to manage my time. I read every Stephen Covey book the man published, and it took me 7 years, Brandon. And there would be maybe some listeners today who are saying, I'm still there. I'm still in that that part of life where I'm feeling the chaos. But I tell you, you can learn to do things differently. Old dogs, young dogs, medium-aged dogs, whatever, they all can learn new tricks. Because being organized and productive, and here's the first thing I want listeners to take away, being organized and productive is a skill. It is a skill to be learned. just like running a business, just like painting a wall. It is a skill to be learned. There is a right way, and there are less right ways. So there, you've got to devote yourself to learning new skills. And then once you do, you can be more productive. You can be more effective. You can work less hours. I had one client who was working 80 hours a week simply because she was not managing her time well. She was trying to keep everything memorized in her head, and that was not very effective to her. And she reduced her work hours down to a standard 55 to 60 per week, and she is the director of a very large company. So that it's possible, Brandon. You can learn the skills just like I did, and it's possible. But understand that these are habits and things that you need to apply every day. A car is only as good as its driver. So you've got to make sure you continue to keep the car in tune and you keep your skills in line and you move forward. And then you'll be able to drive those plans wherever you want them to go. So just know going into this, I'll be giving a lot of opinions on a lot of different topics today, but I'm coming from a place of great understanding that this is not easy. And for me, it's very, very intentional, and I have to – sometimes I fall off the horse and have to get right back on with my good habits. But if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Well, that is good because hope springs eternal. And you mentioned plans and driving down the road is a good segue into the first question I want to ask you. We're off a little bit on the timing, but it's very close to the beginning of 2016. And if you almost want to look at many of our listeners' calendars in the painting industry, many people think about their year starting in the spring because that's when things really kick off in our industry. So let me ask you a question. People often equate being organized and planning with taking a long-term view, a 12-month view or a calendar view, when there are people right now that are, we've got a last kind of a month or so before things get, or maybe a month or two before things get busy, what advice do you have when it comes to goal setting and getting clear on what you want to accomplish from the long-term perspective when you're looking at, 10 months, 11 months, 12 months out? What advice do you have for people that are trying to get clear there?
And that's a great question because we don't want to start confusing activity with productivity, and because we want. So the first thing is, and like I warned you, I read everything Stephen Covey wrote. So let's just start there. Begin with the end in mind.
Mm-hmm.
12 months, 2 years, 10 years out, whatever it is, begin with the end in mind. Think about it. My daughter is a freshman in high school, and one of the writing assignments that she hates the most is when her high school English teacher asks them to write their obituaries.
Mm.
Now, think about it. That talk about beginning with the end in mind there. Right now, she came home last night with an assignment to write her personal mission statement. Begin with the end in mind. If we don't know that what that mountaintop in the distance is, whether it is our personal mission or whether it is some sort of more tactical numeric goal, if we don't have that mountaintop in the distance to strive for and all we're doing is looking straight down at our feet, we're going to go on a very windy, windy path and probably just – and wherever we end up, we'll look up and go, oh, surprise, look where I am. You don't want that kind of surprise with your life because you only have one to live. So begin with the end in mind. Ask yourself, by 12:31, what is it I want to have accomplished? And what are those things? How do they make me feel? How will they change my life? How will they change my business? Get those things so clearly formed in your mind that you can see the crags and valleys and waterfalls on that mountaintop in the distance. And it is something that will continue to motivate you as you're walking the rocky path. Begin with the end in mind. Second thing, make sure, and I tell people about goal setting, there is a dark side of the force. Okay, hold on a second. I'm sorry, I had to go there. There's a dark side of the force that we've got to understand with goal setting. Goal setting helps focus anyone toward a desired aim. Okay, that is the beauty and the potential downside of goal setting. If you are hyper focused on something, you may have blinders on, and you potentially could ignore other important things. So, when you're beginning with that end in mind, don't forget balance. You are not just a business owner. You have lots of goals across a wide variety of areas. I'll name some of them: your career, finances, health and recreation, family and friends, community, spiritual, household. It is reasonable and important for you to have goals set in all of those areas, not just I want to make this much money or expand this much or retain this many customers or that. If we hyper focus on those on goals in just one area, the others that are also very important to us could fall by the wayside. So be balanced. Begin with the end in mind and be balanced.
That is very good. And so often I find myself, and I'm taking notes for my own use right now, I tend to be very focused, and I think men sometimes in particular, which is a large makeup of our membership and just the painting industry in general, you forget or neglect, as you had mentioned when you made your key decision to become more organized, the other things that are happening. And trust me, in your painting business, if your home life, if your spiritual life, if your health falls apart, the business will not be far behind it. So those are really good things to point out, Melissa. Let's talk about the planning. You gave us two tips, okay? Number one, to really get focused on where we want to go, get clear. Number two, to make sure that we haven't left anything off the table, that we're not being myopic in our focus. People want to plan, know they need a plan, but what are the big obstacles that keep people from putting their plan down, especially in writing, so that they have a more clear pathway to where they want to go?
Okay. Goal setting is boring and demotivating. Okay, so that's one thing just to know. And if you're like, I don't wanna, you are not alone. Okay, it's just putting something down in writing like that. You look at it. It's not how we would define yay party time. Additionally, looking at a goal, here's what happens. Psychologically, okay, I think I warned. Did we warn the listeners that I was a psychologist? If we didn't, folks, you're warned.
Yes, we would within the first like minute
okay.
or two.
So all right,
been
good. You're
duly
all right.
Warned.
So here we duly warned. Here we go. Okay, psychologically speaking, when you create a goal, you are creating a gap between where you are right now and where you want to be. So hold up two fingers on either hand, like one finger on one hand and one finger on another hand in front of you right now. And put them real close together, about an inch apart. Imagine a rubber band attaching your two fingers. Let's say one finger represents where you are now and one finger represents where you want to be. Now pull those fingers apart a little bit wider. That rubber band would stretch. That is called stress. The wider the gap between where you are and where you want to be, the more you feel stretched or pulled or stressed. So just know going into it that there is a factor of this that is exhausting, demotivating, and stressful. That is normal. If we go into this for the fun and games of setting goals, we will be just terribly disappointed, because we are creating a gap, and that gap causes contention and pain. So recognize that. Know what you're getting yourself into. However, one of the major demotivating factors that I find with some of my clients is that they will want to set a goal, for example, to learn something completely and totally new. They've never done it before. It's a new way of doing things. And so they'll go and they'll say, well, I don't really know how to set a goal for this because I've never done it before. And so they'll be tempted to set a goal. Or, well, I'm gonna learn all about. Give me one of your goals for the year, Brandon. Something that you've never done before. Have you set one like that?
I'm thinking about taking on beer barrel polka music,
beer
accordion,
barrel
largely
polka. Okay.
Music. No, I don't. Okay. One goal I have for this year is I play country music guitar. And my wife has bought me lessons. I can play almost anything, but I can't really pick, and I want to learn to pick.
Okay, so you've never done it before. If you set yourself what is called a performance goal with learning to pick, you might say, I am going to get so good at picking that I'm going to be able to play 6 concerts by the end of the year, okay? You've never done this before. So what happens if you get into this developing this new skill and you're realizing, I really stink at picking. This is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. There's no way I'm going to be able to play in 6 concerts this year or in public settings or whatever it will be. So you have set a performance goal for yourself when you should have set a learning goal for yourself. I am going to practice picking for X number of hours per week until I feel like I can – you know, play for my daughter and my wife and get living room, to run the living room. So, which you probably could do now, Brandon. But but anyway, so when you're worried about the stress caused by goal setting, when you are considering what obstacles you might encounter in setting your goals, remember that sometimes you need to set a goal to learn things, and
mm-hmm.
that's okay. You don't always have to set a goal to perform something in a certain way. Learning goals can help you get where you want to be and be much less demotivating and stressful than the performance goals. Use them wisely.
That is really good. Getting clear on what you're actually trying to get, setting somewhat expectations that are more in line with reality so that when you have those small wins, you feel good about it instead of like you've just failed before you've gotten started.
Abandon the goal faster than anything, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no point in having lofty goals if they get abandoned. And so better to make progress by all means. Well, we've got our 2016 objectives in writing because we've kind of gotten clear on the type of goals that we want. We understand going into the process it's going to be challenging. And we know that we've got to be careful how we set our goals so that we can make progress on them and feel good about them. Let's talk about implementation. We may have a goal list where we're up here at this 50,000-foot view of our business. We've set these large goals. They're clear. They're good goals. What is it that sometimes makes these plans go awry? How is it that people get from these goals of something that kind of seems nebulous or like it has a lot of moving parts down to next action steps? What does that look like?
It looks like verbs.
Verbs.
No, seriously,
like
verbs. Verbs. Goals often are, like you said, lofty statements, 50,000 feet, mountaintops in the distance, whatever analogy may be, they're big, okay? They're big and far away. Verbs are how we get ourselves from point A to point B. For you and your goal of learning how to pick, one verb might be schedule lessons. You know, one verb might be practice X number of times per week. So you get verbs in there, and it takes it from this huge, you know, increase profitability by X percent down to the specific action steps that I need to take in order to get from, you know, one finger to another with that rubber band stretched in between it, okay? So verbs, if your action statement does not have a verb in it, it is not an action statement. So make sure you have very, very actionable steps. And if you look at one of your mountaintops in the distance and you're like, I don't know how to get there, this is a little
mm-hmm.
overwhelming, then ask yourself, what is my next step? What is my next step? That's, and then that next step, again, needs to have a, say it with me, folks, verb. in it. So what you look at the look at the big goal, break it down to the verby base, and if you can't, and if you're having struggles getting to that point, just what is my next step? What is the step after that? What is after that? What is after that? Map it out in its excruciating detail as you need in order to feel like you've got your yellow brick road laid down before you. That because it's all about the verbs. And once you get those statements made, then you integrate those actions into whatever system you are currently managing to or using to manage your time and tasks anyway. I believe that every person needs two tools of time management, and they have not changed in thousands of years. One is a calendar. One is a task list or a to-do list, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And those verby statements that are related to your goals need to be put onto your task list just like all of your other tasks, pay bills, learn to pay, you know, schedule guitar appointment, hire contractor for XYZ. All those things are all together on one to-do list because you are one person. You are not multiple individuals. I mean, the time does not bend with you. You are one person, so you have one calendar and one to-do list. On your calendar, if you have set yourself a goal to read industry articles once a week, that needs to be blocked off on your calendar. It's reading time, folks. So use your normal tools of time and task management and integrate the verb statements that come from your annual plans into those.
Well, we've taken something very kind of big. We've broken it down into small tasks. And then there's, you know, the boogeyman of implementation. We've set these priorities. We've identified them as things that are important because they know that they'll give us more of what we want, whether it's time, money, sense of purpose, et cetera. And so what I have found with owners of all small businesses and our painters in particular is that you know exactly what you need to do, but yet you look back in a week or you look back in 2 weeks or a month and you've spent those 60, 70, 80, 40 hours a week working, but for whatever reason these new goals that are on this paper, these next action items that we know are critically important, get left undone. But we have done a lot of other things. We seem to get bogged down in this low-priority, energy-draining stuff. How can people identify what's dragging them away from achieving these meaningful results?
Well, if we are only acting and never planning, then that's going to be real hard. If you finish a week and you stop and there's no way for you to even guess, assess, or fathom how you've spent, you know, 80% of your time that week,
mm-hmm.
and then you're going on no information. So the first thing you've got to have is data. And I'm broken record here, your tools of time management have not changed in thousands of years. You need to look back at your calendar. You need to look at your to-do list. What have I completed? What have I not completed? What have I not added? Those things give you data to understand how is it that I am spending my time. I'm meant to be doing research on a new technique, but what I ended up doing was troubleshooting a problem that my site contractor really should have handled.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to have information. If I have a client that is just looking at me, just baffled by what's going on, I have them keep a diary for 2 weeks. Now, it's not, you know, dear diary, you know, puppy puke today, and the boy doesn't like me anymore. I'm talking about a business-wise time diary of how you spend your time. In major blocks, like probably 15 to 30-minute blocks is about as micro as I would get with this. Just keep a log. How am I spending my time? And do it for at least 2 weeks and say, oh, my goodness, a good 50% of my hours are spent problem solving. there's no way I'm going to be able to develop my business if I am the only problem solver in my organization. I've got to be able to train other people. I've got to figure out what's causing these problems and address that. So you've got to have data, either by taking it, you know, keeping a diary, looking at your calendar, looking at your to-do list. And then from that, there are only four options. It is actually a decision-making model. It's called McGee's 4Ds of decision-making, but I use these 4Ds when it comes to your actions. There are only four. There's 4Ds. You can do it, delegate it, defer it, or dump it. Those are your only choices. Do it, delegate it, defer it, or dump it. You know, there's no Harry Potter here, and if you can either do it yourself. You can delegate it to someone else. You can defer it until later, but if you continually are deferring something, you may just need to dump it off your list altogether.
Yeah.
So once you have your information, you got to look at these things and say, which D am I going to do on these specific tasks? And that's how you keep yourself from getting bogged down. But it requires data and a bit of self-examination and willingness to change there as well.
Well, as people get these time diaries to you, and as you work with small business owners and other people that are in management, what are the top three habits, things that people are doing in abundance that maybe is killing their productivity and not getting them near the results that they think it is? What do you see? I mean, I see with our businesses, painting contractors, there's five areas that we really help people that all successful business owners continually work on, the same five problems over and over again. What do you see in this area that you work in?
Well, the first one comes back to one of the D's I just discussed, and that's failing to delegate, making yourself the bottleneck. All things pass through you, and failing to delegate appropriately to your team. And if you're a solopreneur like me, you may not have a whole bunch of people underneath you to whom you can delegate. However, that is where strategic outsourcing comes into play. You've got to have good partnerships with accounting folks, with potentially a virtual assistant if you don't have one hired. You personal service providers for your home and life. It is important to delegate and outsource appropriately, because there are people whose, quote, hourly rate is a lot less than yours, and it's worth paying them that hourly rate to do these things. Secondly, that I see almost everybody is constant attention to email. We are binged and bonged and buzzed to pieces, and we are these default settings in our mobile devices and on our laptops and desktop machines, where every time an incoming email arrives, it just all does everything but stand up and dance the cha-cha. This has programmed us that we must be instantly responsive to email. So I tell my clients to be appropriately but not instantly responsive to email, and turn off all of those notifications, because a person who receives 40 to 50 email messages a day is getting interrupted 40 to 50 times, and it takes 3 to 5 minutes to get back on track after an interruption, so you do the math. So
yeah.
Failing to delegate is the first one. Constant attention to email is the second one. The third one, this is particularly relevant to small business owners, is not documenting processes. That being the only one in the organization who knows how to do stuff, not making standard operating procedures, making it so everyone has to come and ask you, now how am I supposed to do that again? Being the source of all knowledge is the worst thing you can do for yourself and your business. You know, a mature business should be able to run without you. And process documentation is an essential step toward getting there. So document processes. You know, that don't just keep everything in your head. That's a habit I'd love for my clients to get rid of.
Well, let me ask you a question. So you want to get somewhere, and Number one, we've covered a lot of just really good stuff here. I've written lots of notes myself. Projects. You got lots of stuff on your plate, and you've got to reach a goal. How in the world do you begin to organize them, categorize them in some kind of fashion so that you can get to where you need to get? How do you prioritize things so that you know you're working on the right things at the right time? Do you have any frameworks or recommendations that you've used there?
Specifically for projects, Brandon?
Yes.
Okay. Projects, first of all, I'm assuming projects are simply multi-step tasks, okay?
Yes.
And
what I'm not really talking about, like most of our owners and most small business owners are perfectly good at executing whatever it is they do for a living over and over again. It's all the other stuff, the stuff that brings in sales, generates leads, closes sales, lets them reach a new market, all the stuff that's slightly different or outside of the droning production of whatever it is they do on a daily basis. How do you get those things organized and figure out, you know, which one you need to start on first?
Figuring out which one you need to start on first goes back to those mountaintops in the distance. How have you prioritized those? So where to begin with that is should be consistent with your big picture. Where am I going? I was working with a client just a couple of weeks ago who was not as profitable as he needed it to be. He looked at me, he goes, I haven't taken an owner's draw in 2 years. That's got to change. So number one priority became increased profitability of the company. And so that framed the tasks that he had on his list. So you got these things that you need to get done. I do believe that the tools and time management haven't changed in thousands of years. You've got to have a task list, and that task list needs to reflect the things that must be done by you, not the stuff you've delegated or dumped, okay? It's the stuff that you decided must be done by you. So you, in terms of prioritization, here's the thing, Brandon. I have had clients take their to-do list, and I say, okay, do A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. Now, this is where I go a little bit against Mr. Covey, because the Franklin Covey method says, you know, A, priorities, B, priorities, C, priorities, and that's all well and good, but every time I've had a client do that to their to-do list, 80% of the items on the list were A, priorities.
Yeah.
So that
can't have
80%
A priorities. That does not work.
That did not help. So in terms of prioritization, here is the method that I teach my clients. I say, first of all, don't put it on your list unless it's an A or a high B, okay? First of all. So filter out the C priorities you need to delegate or outsource or dump. Forgive yourself and dump. So don't put it on your list unless it's an A or a real high B priority, okay? Second of all, I recommend for every task on your list to choose what I call a progress date. This is a date on which you wish to make progress on this task. Remember, the task has a verb in it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's some action to take. But if you've got 40 items on your task list, you need to have all 40 of those items need to have a progress date on it. And then you can sort this master task list by the progress date and know what actions you need to take on any individual day, okay? So they are all priorities. What you are committing to is a day to make progress. Now, here's the kicker. The day arrives. I recommend no more than 5 to 7 tasks with the same progress date, okay, because giving yourself 20 tasks on the same day is just self-flagellation. So you look at the day, and you look at the 7 things you've tasked to make progress on. Now, again, you're either going to do it, delegate it, defer it, or dump it, okay, that you still have your 4Ds decisions to make there. And if you do it, then it's done, it's gone, it's off your list. Yay me, I'm on to the next thing.
Yeah.
If you defer it, you might defer it because, I didn't get to it that day, and that is okay. You are not a bad person, so you might defer it to another day. If, you know, if you get to the end of the day and I just didn't do it, if you're continually deferring something, you need to ask yourself a question. So you may do it, defer it, delegate it, or dump it, and you just make progress. That's what progress looks like. All of your progress dates should be now and in the future, today and in the future. There should be no progress dates in the past, because even if the actual deadline of something has passed, you still may be making progress on it after the deadline. So just know that a progress date is not a false deadline or some sort of way to, quote, trick yourself that you have a deadline on it. It's because you won't fool yourself. You're too smart for that. It is a date on which you wish to make progress on the task, and that's how I recommend in reality to prioritize things. I call it a time-based prioritization system. And it's much more realistic when everything's important.
That makes sense, and that's really good. I wrote a lot of notes down there. Well, let me ask you this. So we've got lots of tools here, lots of strategies that we can use in our business. I want to kind of switch gears here in a fashion. A lot of the small business owners that I work with, particularly the people that are in my one-on-one platinum group, are like me. They kind of suffer from anxiety. I think owning a business can be an anxious thing as it is, and if you're on top of that an anxious person, it can really, you know, it can affect you physically, emotionally. You can take it home with you. From an organizational standpoint, what do you think causes this sense of angst and anxiety, and what recommendations, because a lot of times people probably come to you not because they're upset that they're disorganized. They're anxious about being disorganized, or their disorganization has caused something to go wrong, and therefore they're anxious and worried about it. What tips or recommendations have you given to people to deal with the type of anxiety that comes in a fast-paced, higher-stakes business environment?
The question that people, or the fear that people express most often in my initial assessments with my clients is they say, I don't even know what I'm missing. I have so much happening and there's so much going on that I could be missing stuff, and I don't know what that is. It's the fear of missing something, and the fear of being surprised. My first boss, you know, had a no surprise rule. She told, you know, 20 something me that whatever I did, it could be terrible, but as long as she wasn't surprised by it, you know, somebody didn't come to her and surprise her with what I'd done, she wouldn't get angry. And so I was the first person to confess all of my sins. I did this stupid thing. By the way, just as a side note, one of my dumb things was I accidentally sent a blank email to 775 people. So anyway, I had to go tell her about that. But fear of the unknown, fear of what I'm missing. And typically that happens with a person who is trying to manage their task list mentally. They are forcing themselves to be this traffic cop at an intersection, and the roads are coming at them from 12 different directions, and they're trying to protect traffic. And that is an impossible task. They can't that you can't be successful. First of all, the human I warned you, I'm a psychologist, and here it goes again. The human brain cannot remember that much stuff. The earliest studies of memory show that the range of the number of things that we humans can remember at any one time, okay, is between 5 items and 9 items. So the average number of things we can remember, if we're given a list, is 7, and the range is between 5 and 9. So if we're trying to maintain our task list mentally, we will probably remember, if we're lucky, 7 things, okay? The typical busy person has anywhere between 40 and 70 different things to do, okay? And if we are only remembering 7 of those, it is no wonder we are suffering from anxiety, because we flat out are forgetting things. Additionally, the pressure of using memory to manage your tasks is that you feel like you have to drop everything and respond to an issue right now. Because if I don't respond to this email right now, I will forget to respond to it tomorrow, when really it would be just tomorrow would be just fine to do this, or even next week, next month, or next year. But if I don't do it right now, I will forget. So we focus on the now, and this and everything feels urgent and pressure filled, and it's simply because, and it sounds so silly, we do not take the time to download our brains into a task management system, into and putting progress dates to things. Doing that is one of the biggest stress relievers that my clients experience. Now, a lot of them will make this master list of tasks and look at that and say, there is no way a sane human can accomplish this. And I say, okay, welcome to your reality check. Welcome to your reality check. This and no wonder you're driving yourself and other people crazy, because you're right, no sane person can accomplish this. So what causes the stress, fear, and of what we're missing? What do we do about it? We make a list, and we get that reality check.
Well, that is, I feel better just having heard that. And I've often talked to, I'm not a psychologist, nor do I play one on TV. I could probably use one. But often when I work with our guys, they're all stressed out and anxious, and one of the questions I ask them, which at least lets me know that I'm, even though I made this up on my own, that there's some truth to it, I say, well, tell me what you're worried about, and I always ask them, do you have this stuff written down somewhere? Is it on a Word document? Is it just on a legal pad? Is it somewhere where your brain doesn't have to constantly worry and think about it? And the answer is most often no. And I said, well, just get this stuff out of your head, first of all. And so that's good advice. I know I always feel better if I'm stressed out and I can't seem to focus. I have to walk myself over to another table in my office here and write everything down that's on my mind, in which case I immediately feel better. I can put a number beside it and get going. Let's talk about habits and routines. When it comes to planning and organizing, you know, business owners have lots coming at them. What do you recommend people do, either on a weekly basis or a daily basis? Are there some things people need to be checking off a list to make sure that all of this information is maintained and that progress is made?
Well, I really like a couple of daily routines that I recommend to almost all of my clients. And one is an opening ritual, and another is a closing ritual. Now, I know I say the word ritual, and I'm not talking about burning incense and...
Well, I was hoping you were. I've got a black robe. I just wondered what I was going to do with it, so...
Exactly. So let's start chanting. No! A ritual is something that you do that has defined steps, and it is something that you do regularly and has positive result for you, okay? So think about how you start your day. I have many of my clients put this on their calendars, and they call it opening ritual. They call it beginning meeting. I don't care what it's called. They just have an appointment on their calendar where they get themselves prepared for the day, because getting yourself prepared for the day does not look like opening email and starting to answer it. Okay, that's not an opening ritual. The opening ritual is reviewing your calendar for the day. What have I got on the list? Have I allowed enough travel time to get from point A to point B, or will I be relying on helicopters and teleportation? So look at your calendar. Second thing, look at your task list. I may have assigned a progress date of today, but that was before today arrived, and today may look a little bit different than when I get there, so I may need to reassign some of these progress dates, or are there other things that came to me in the middle of the night that I need to add to this list? So, and then you just do some things to open up your day that get you mentally in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about the big picture of the day and not just jumping into the weeds and the details of the stuff that you have to do. Say, what have I planned? So that's what an opening ritual looks like. A closing ritual is very similar, but it serves a different purpose. back in the day, Brandon, before you and me, there were time clocks on the walls of manufacturing facilities, and there were time cards. And workers would enter the building and, you know, and pull their card and leave the building, and they would take their card and insert it into this really clunky machine and hear a very satisfying ching, which meant the day is done. The day is done. You're done. Go home. You're done. We don't have that anymore. We are constantly connected by mobile devices and home offices and blah, 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 blah. So we don't get that satisfying ding at the end of the day that says you're done. I like a closing ritual to artificially create that end, that end of day. This is the time where I'm giving myself permission to stop working on tasks and just wrap things up. I need to look at my task list for the day, you know, delete things that I completed, change the progress dates on other things if they recur or if I have more work to do on them. So I look at my task list, I look at my calendar for the next several business days. What's coming up? What preparation, you know, do I need to do for a certain client meeting or whatnot? And do I need to add that to my task list? Just getting myself ready. It's all about managing those tools that are so important to you. You can also add things to your closing ritual, like clearing off your desk or getting down. Bear with me, Brandon. Getting down to zero emails in your inbox. I swear. During the closing ritual is when you finish up. It's done. And when it's over, you have ching! You're done. You've finished your day. And those types of rituals help with balance, help with a sense of completion, and most definitely help you stay on track with your tools of time management.
Well, that is awesome. This has been one of my favorite calls. Let me ask you a question. If you had a few sentences or a quote that kind of summarizes your philosophy on organization or productivity the best, things that you like, things that you would, you know, if your career had a tombstone, you would write on it, what would those be?
Four words. Perfection is not productive. Perfection is not productive. Perfectionism is the single biggest cause of disorganization that I see in my clients. Perfectionism leads us to fail to start things because we're so fearful of not being able to do them exactly the way we want to do them. Perfectionism causes us to fail to finish things because they're not just right. There's one more thing I can do. Perfectionism is shackles that we put on ourselves. It's telling ourselves that we are never, ever, 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 ever going to be good enough. And that is so unproductive. There are so many times where we need to say, GEPO, GEPO, good enough, press on. Good enough,
there you go.
Press on. Good enough, press on. Just move forward. Strive for progress. Not perfection.
That is really good. Well, you've been very kind with your time. Would you tell folks how they can get some of your resources or reach out to you? What's the best way for people to learn more about you?
Well, the first thing, Brandon, is my ridiculous name, knowing how to spell it. Because people are like, Melissa Gracious? Is she serious? And yes, I've heard it once or twice. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. It's not spelled the way you think. My last name is spelled like Gratias, Gratias. Not my fault. I married it, and so the first thing to know about reaching out to me is just to Google Melissa, Melissa Gracious, Gratias, and you will find me, because this is going to be shocking to you. I'm the only one in the United States.
Well, there you go.
There are no other Melissa Graciouses. But I love social media. I am on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, and YouTube. I post daily tips on those on many of those sites about being productive and effective at work. I have a website under my name, melissagracious.com, that contains my blog where I post weekly articles of things that inspire me, people that inspire me to be more productive and effective. And I would ask your these listeners, I'm doing profiles right now of productivity superheroes, people that just that have some techniques. Are they perfect? No, but they are productive in their work and in their life. And I like to interview productivity superheroes and write about them on my blog. So if you or someone you know or love is a productivity superhero, please reach out to me. Give me that person's name so that I can learn from them and share their story with other people. But Brandon, thank you for this opportunity to share my story. I really appreciate what you do and the passion with which you do it and all that you give to your clients. You're one of the best in the business, my man. Thank you so much.
You're too kind. And thank you, Melissa. I appreciate you sharing over two decades of wisdom with us on topics of organization and productivity. And I'd like to thank you, my APPC members, for tuning in to another Ask the Expert call. I'm Brandon Lewis, and we'll talk to you next time.